This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, and welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous. This is Shireen. We have a little bit of a different episode today because I'm going solo. I'm in West Virginia talking to Ibtissam Barazi. She is just an incredible, incredible person doing really important work. We talk about her work with the ACLU and helping refugees. And I'm not even going to give this away because you have to listen to the episode, but she formed the God Squad with interfaith community and everything else. It's just a really amazing conversation, and it really left me with a lot of hope. And I hope it does for you too. So enjoy.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my parents? Why were we born?
We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, everybody. This is Shireen. You're listening to Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm here by myself today because I'm in West Virginia and Anna is not. But my aunt, actually, right as I landed in West Virginia, she came up to me and she was like, you have to talk to this person. Her work is amazing. She's done some incredible things for the community. So I was roped into this interview, but I'm actually incredibly excited for it because the person you're about to meet has done some truly important work. Especially for a region like West Virginia, where there's a lot of, I don't know, not the most liberal people around. So I'm just going to bring her right in and we can talk about your life and your work and all that good stuff. We're joined by Ibtissam Barazi, and I want to just give you the chance to introduce yourself, like just a little log line about like where you're from and who you are.
Thank you, Shireen, for asking me to be part of this great work. I really appreciate it. I am Ibtissam Barazi. A lot of people call me Sue because mm-hmm. we do live in West Virginia after all. So it's not easy for them to say Ibtissam. So I came to this country as a 17-year-old out of the 11th grade. And I got married. And we, after going to Arkansas and Missouri, we landed here in Charleston, West Virginia, where my husband started working. And I also was able to get my GED in Arkansas and started school here. Actually started in Arkansas and finished my undergraduate degree in chemistry here in Charleston. Went on to get two master's degrees, one in industrial hygiene and one in environmental specialty. And then I went on to finish my PhD. At the same time, I had my three kids and started working with Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, in 1983, I believe. So I worked for them for 29 years. And as a Muslim woman, as an immigrant Muslim living in West Virginia, as Shireen said, it's not the most liberal state, although Charleston is really very progressive, and it's easy to make friends. And of course, I was not wearing my hijab at the time, and before 9/11. But then I started to think, you know, it's my duty to wear my hijab. And as an OSHA assistant area director, my job is really required me to visit a lot of companies, meet with a lot of different kind of people, from a head of company to an employee, and then travel a lot because I taught a lot. I taught the federal laws as the federal standard applies to the workplace. And then, of course, I encountered a lot of prejudices. As you see me, if I don't open my mouth, I'm okay. I look as typical American. Actually, I was chosen at the University of Arkansas in one of my classes, human geography, out of 50 students as a typical, what a typical American looks like.
That's a very interesting competition, first of all, but
well, the students selected you only based on your look.
Interesting.
And when I got to the front of the class, and I remember the professor, he was an older gentleman, and he says, okay, they selected you. They didn't know who's who. What's your name? And he said, tell me your name. And with my heavy accent at the time, I said, Ibtissam Barazi. He was just about died laughing. And so did the entire school out of 50. So he said, see, you don't even know what you're looking at. Everybody looks typical Americans. Needless to say, during the time I worked with OSHA, when people hear you talking, they always want to know where you're from, where you're from. Initially, people didn't have any concept where Damascus, Syria is. That's where I came from. That's where I was raised. But then after 9/11 and me wearing my hijab, it started to become a little bit more difficult. And I realized then the need. I realized it earlier, but it wasn't so pronounced. I realized then the need that I really need, once I retire, to advocate for my people, for my religion, for immigrants. And alhamdulillah, God gave me the opportunity once I retired after 29 years of service, is actually my imam at the time, Imam Ihtisham Al-Haq, said to me, you know, sister, he heard me speak at University of Marshall University, and he says, oh my God, I think you will do wonderful. And subhanAllah, Allah will give you the opportunity. The more you talk about Islam and the interfaith, the more you Allah opens more doors for you. And I was my community asked me to be a vice president. They elected me. This is my seventh year. I represent the Muslim community in a lot of interfaith. My object is really to tear down walls between faith and to talk about our shared commonality between Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And a lot of people have misconception of what Islam is. Last Wednesday, to be specific, I was at a Bible class study, believe it or not, at Elizabeth Memorial Church, and they had studied Islam and Judaism. They have a little booklet. They're studying faith and different concept, and they asked me to come and answer question about Islam. And so we had really very lively, excellent conversation. It's really the best thing to do is to have conversation with people about what we share. We in Islam follow the Ten Commandments the same as the Christianity do, as same as Judaism. And all really every human being desire in life is to live peacefully, happily, make a home for their family. A lot of people have the misconception that immigrants are here to take their jobs, to harm them. Specifically in the case of refugees and asylum seekers. Working with a bunch of interfaith group I formed, I was one of the organizers in 2015 as in response to the Syrian refugee crisis. Some people came to me and said, what can we do to help Syrian refugees? And we formed West Virginia Interfaith Refugee Ministry. And we actually did a lot of work in order for us. There are, the government have a certain requirements. We are part of the Episcopal Migration Ministry. And so there are 9 religious organizations. The government, as for the Refugee Act in the 60s, gave the rights to these organizations, such as HIAS, Episcopal Migration, Catholic Charities. So they gave them the right to process and receive refugees and try to help these refugees through the government program. And so we formed for that purpose, and we applied to the State Department. We are interfaith, which means we have Jewish rabbi who serves on our board. We have, of course, a lot of Christian of different denomination practices. And of course, we had Muslims as well. So we are unique in our composition because we're the only organization in the whole entire nation that comprised of interfaith group that we serve refugees. So we were approved in November of 2016 to be as a satellite or affiliate office for the Episcopal Migration Ministry in Charleston. And we were actually slated to receive 130 Syrian refugees in the fall, in the summer of the 2017. Until lo and behold, Mr. Trump got elected.
Yeah.
And here comes the Muslim ban in 2017. And suddenly the State Department approval was pulled from us. So basically we got canceled. Mm-hmm. But that kind of broke a lot of our hearts. And we collectively met and reorganized and reformed a little bit to a point where we said, we're not going to die. We're not going to go away. He's not going to stop us. So we started to become advocates for refugees and asylum seekers. And with all the Mexican you hear getting passing the borders and being dumped on the streets, somebody heard about our organization in El Paso, Texas, and sent us actually 3 families. Lo and behold, suddenly we found them at the bus station with a sign that says WVIRM, West Virginia Interfaith Refugee Ministry. Of course, we hosted them. We took care of them. And believe it or not, we were able to save a 2-year-old's life.
Wow.
From these people came to us from, I forgot the name of the country now. And so this boy was born on the road with his mom was pregnant with him, and they traveled thousands of miles to make it to Mexico, and they came through the borders. The first 3 days he was okay, and then we found out he was really having a hard time. We put him in the hospital. We literally saved his life. These families were taught English. We were able to find them jobs. We housed them. We paid for their everyday lives, basically. And now all 3 families with their children, there are 7 children collectively between all these families, they're thriving. The kids are doing great in school. The parents both are working. They're contributing member to the society. We helped them financially for the first year, but then they took over. And this is the whole goal of the refugee and the immigration system, is that this country was built on immigrants. This mm-hmm. country, I don't like to call it the melting pot because that means everybody's personality and heritage disappear. But if you ask any single American, what's your heritage? They belong to somewhere. Unless you are an American Indian, the indigenous, then you are from somewhere. So do not come back and tell me, I'm just an American, I don't want refugees. This country was built on the blood and sweat of the refugees. We made this country what it is. I came here as a 17-year-old from the 11th grade. I worked with OSHA for 29 years, taking care of the lives and the safety of these individuals, making workers basically, making sure they go home at the end of the night, healthy, safe, not dismantled, killed, or anything. So I took care of people. I had 3 children. All 3 of my children are physicians. They are taking care of the health of the refugees, of the immigrants, of West Virginians, of everywhere. These are our doctors, our community. 80% of our community are physicians. And who is here on the front line taking care of the sick and unable to, you know, the unhealthy? specifically during COVID. My son worked in the COVID, who's internist, 30 straight days every day, 16 to 18 hour shift, just taking care of people. So don't come back and tell me immigrants and refugees don't help this country. We're not here to take anybody's place. My mission is to let people know we are all a human being. And as a human being, we can help each other. We not only need to tolerate each other, but we need to celebrate each other. We need to celebrate our differences. What's wrong with having a tabbouleh today versus hamburger? You know what I mean? Diversity, inclusion, and it adds the beauty of the life. It enhances your life. It doesn't take away from your custom, your habit, anything. It actually helps you improve the quality of life by having diverse workplace, by having diverse community, basically.
Mm-hmm. When my family first moved here, because it started with my uncle, then my grandparents, and then extended family, my aunt and my uncle, my other uncles, I just found West Virginia to be the most random place to land. This was like 7 or 6 years ago. I forget when they actually came for the first time, because my uncle was here for a while longer, but whatever. That's another story. But when I first came here to visit, I was really taken aback by how gentle all the community was, because I was expecting the worst, to be honest. Like, I thought they might be looked at funny, or
that's
like,
true.
You know, I didn't know what to expect. So
actually, West Virginians are really, when they get to know you one-on-one, they're basically very, very nice human being, very beautiful, very family oriented. I love being in West Virginia. I've been in West Virginia since 1975. I do not have any intention to leave and go anywhere else, because really, when you get to know them one-on-one, when they're not looking at you as a human being covered with hijab, mm-hmm. piece of cloth on your head, which kind of scares them a little bit. And I can understand why, because of the news media that paints us into a very bad situation. And so therefore, when they talk to you and they get to know you as a person, most of my friends are really in West Virginia here, and specifically in Charleston, that's where I'm based. Are lovely people. I love them. I enjoy their company. I am friends with so many different level of people, whether it's the mayor of Charleston, Mayor Amy Goodwin, she's amazing, or whether some of the legislature or the clergy or the, Rabbi Victor Yurikin and I, and we have another member, Bishop Klusmeyer, who Bishop of the Episcopal Church, who has just retired. They call us the God squad, believe it or not, because
I love that, first of all.
Yes, yeah. Because, you know, there is a bad legislation being pushed and they call us even at 10 p.m., 10:30, come down to the to the state capitol. They're passing something not fair to most people. Let's go. And as soon as they see me with my hijab and Rabbi Yuriki with his yarmulke and Bishop Klusmeyer or Jeff Alan, he's also a clergy, they see him with his collar and they see all three of us walking. I swear to you, one time, one piece of legislation, as soon as we walked in, they took it off their agenda, thinking that we're going to go away, because we did leave the room. And it wasn't even 25 minutes later, I just had gotten to my home when I got the message. Guess what? They put it back at 2 p.m., guess what we did? We came back at 2 p.m. and they had to scrub the whole thing. So that's why they call us the God Squad. We actually do a prayer every year at the state capitol. And all three of us representing all three faiths. These are the people of faith. They are known in our religion, the Book of God, the people of the book. Mm-hmm. And so we have, as I tell them over and over again, we have so much in common between our faith than we have differences.
Yeah. No, I grew up and I was just like, why are there so many issues with Christianity mixed with like Judaism and Islam? Like, they're all so similar. They're based on the same God. The book is just different chapters of the same faith. So I think it's such an important work to unify all. Like the God Squad is sick. Like there should be a God Squad in every city. I just love, I love how open-minded this community is. And my family is so happy here because the community here
is amazing.
It's amazing. And especially the Syrian community, I realized because my parents live in San Diego. I grew up mostly in Southern California, and we don't have like as many Syrians as you guys have. And I found it so comforting to just like know that once a Syrian family settles here, it kind of attracts more like Palestinians and Arabs and whatever it is. I think it's just, that's how a community starts. And at this point, it's just so rich. And the fact that they're accepted makes me feel so like hopeful, because I can be quite pessimistic, to be honest. And I initially came here as quite the pessimist the first time. And I was blown away. I was proven wrong every time. Everyone was so gentle and accepting. And when you did tell me the other day that you were going to Bible study, I was like, come again? So the fact that you're a part of this group and they're accepting of you and you're accepting of them, and the fact that you're presenting yourselves as a unified front is so valuable. Even just like to see it. Not like, you know what I mean? Just it's... I don't think most people would expect that. And I'm really happy that you guys are
doing it. At the beginning of August, we had a different celebration here in town, and this is called Festival. And Dr. David Friesen, who's African-American clergy, invited me to do the opening prayer. And I said, me? And he said, yes, you. And it was such an honor, of course, that I did do the prayer, and I invited my interfaith group clergy to stand with me, and a couple of them made it standing with me. And somebody asked my friend, Reverend Kay Albright, who's wearing her collar, and are you going to pray with her? And she said, no, we want her to pray. And when they first hear you praying, and what's basically making dua and reading a verse of the Quran, a lot of people open their hearts. One of the avenue that I use also to invite people to the masjid, to our masjid. It's not a mosque, it's a masjid. And we have done that. We have done that so many times. And actually, we have a tradition. Every Ramadan, we do an interfaith iftar, which means I invite 70, 80 people to join us in breaking our fast. And this one specific night is designated for the interfaith community. And of course, we did one night to open it up for our neighbors where our masjid is located. And this last year, of course, COVID shut us down for 2 years. But what did I do? I would not let that go away. I made Syrian dessert by myself. Wow. I put them in a tray. I took them house, church to church, to synagogue, to the government official that I'm friend with. And I made them... I just want them to have a piece of Ramadan with us, because Ramadan with us, as you well know, it's a celebration. Mm-hmm. Celebration of community, celebration of faith. It brings family and everybody together. So that is a good thing to share with our community. This is how we learn about each other. Believe it or not, I do go to their churches. I do attend St. John Episcopal Church. I attend the new Baptist church with Dr. Friesen. It doesn't take away from your faith when you learn about other. It actually strengthens your belief and actually strengthens your faith and your humanity as well, mm-hmm. because you're sharing something so personal to a person, and you're sharing a beautiful feeling when you walk into church or synagogue or a masjid. I do feel the presence of God, because as you said, we all have one God. And this past year, when we first opened up after COVID for the interfaith iftar, I actually invited over 80 people, and I had a lot more who said to me, why didn't you invite me? Why wasn't I included? And I talked to my the masjid administration, and I said, guess what, guys? Next year, it's just going to be a whole lot bigger, because everybody enjoys coming to the masjid. They get to break the fast with us, go upstairs, and some of them stand with us in prayer. And then we come down and we eat and we just talk to each other as a community. The more you talk, the more familiar that person who looks different to you. And the more you realize as a human being, good God, we have so much in common.
Yeah.
Humanity, most importantly, if we don't have anything else, we have a humanity to share. And this is a world that we all go through such a hard time every day. Everybody's going through some hardship. And when the more you bring people together and really show them that you care and you love them, then it makes you feel good. I was just at the ACLU West Virginia, which I serve on the board, and we're launching a new campaign, given the wearing a green ribbons to show everybody that women have the right to choose. In all faith, women have the right to choose. It's your body, it's your choice. And when I walked in, one of the girls' administrator, Lori actually, and Rose, give me a hug. I said, oh boy, do I need that hug. And she just hugged me again. I mean, just that human connection that sometimes we all need.
Yeah.
Why not open your life, open yourself, talk to somebody who looks different than you are. Don't be afraid of their color of their skin. Don't be afraid if they wear a piece of cloth on their head. It might be something they believe in, but it's nothing to you.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't bother you. I know it's a flag. It's like I tell people, I'm wearing my flag on my head. I want you to know who I am. And I'm proud of it. And it affects me. It doesn't affect you. In a Bible study, we had a very comprehensive discussion about Sharia law.
Mm.
And they got to learn Sharia does not affect them. It affects us, Muslim people, in terms of inheritance, in terms of death, in terms of marriages. It has nothing to do with governmental law.
Yeah. I mean, I think you bring up a really good point about spirituality in general, about how it is deeply personal. And I think people forget, especially when they're only shown like violent images of something, and they go headfirst with hate.
Yes.
I think they can forget that spirituality is so personal, and it's just you. It doesn't affect anyone else but yourself. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I want to ask you more questions, but first, let's take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
And we're back. I was curious, we were talking about spirituality. When you were younger, I know you came here quite young as well. Were you always spiritual, or did you grow into more spirituality? Like, how did you go on your journey of this message being so important? Or was it always so important to you?
I mean, the household that my parents that I grew up with and my extended family, we are religious people. We're not extremely conservative or strict, but we are, you know, conservative folks in a way. And it was normal for me growing up to what I was, you know, it wasn't something I really thought about. But coming back, coming here and living here among different faith. And now you need to know, in Syria, I had my best friends were Christian in school, in high school. So I really enjoyed that. So I know about the faith. But coming here and interacting more, and specifically when I started to see some of the hateful looks that I get and the stares and the behavior and the other, this other that people look at you like you are, either have horns or something. That really touched me a lot. Deep down in me, it's like, I'm not so different than you are. We all, God created us all in the same way. We have the same blood. We have the same structure. So why are you hating on me so badly? Mm-hmm. Is it because I look different? If I remove my hijab and don't speak, I look just like any other one. It was proven to me. And so I started to focus more on my spirituality. It actually increased my spirituality. And it actually strengthened my faith. It didn't distract from it. And speaking to my friend Rabbi Victor and to the bishops and even to a lot of the clergy though, who are my friends, I had an amazing friend. Her name is Marquita, Reverend Marquita Hutchinson, who she was the director of St. John Episcopal Church, and we became very close. And she said the same thing to me. She says, talking to you, getting to know you as a preacher, I mean, she's a rector, it also helped strengthen her faith. It didn't distract from it. And so, you know, you just get to believe that this faith, these faith that God created, it really, once you learn and you study all of them, it really, basically, they're all the same. Men made them a little different. Human, because of power or whatever you want to call it. But if you look at the real faith and you look at the people who actually practice the faith, they are not so different than you are.
Yeah. No, I think valuing humanity is something that kind of gets lost in religious rules or whatever. I think so much of the time people are stuck in these boxes about what you can't and can't do, or just self-imposed rules, when really it's just about accepting others and being nice to others and valuing your humanity as much as someone else's.
And don't forget the fact that we are being bombarded by negative messages. This negative messaging that started long time ago, the Ku Klux Klan or whatever, it in the past before 2016, to be quite frank, okay, without mentioning any names, people had some hesitant in being in your face, basically. But that era, 2017 and on, in that election, it sort of gave them, it seems to have given them the right to say whatever they feel they want to say. If they feel like cussing you out, they don't seem to hesitate at all. If they seem to stare at you, if they seem to want to chase you out of Kroger, which I was chased out of Kroger, because they forget the fact that I am a human being who needs to eat, just like you. I'm not so different than you. But this hate period that we're going through, it is not good for anybody, even the hater. Actually, it's more painful for the hater than the receiver, because you're showing me that you really are very unhappy in your life, and you see the need to take out your frustration on me. Why?
Yeah. No. I want to know about you getting traced out of Kroger, but we can do that off mic if you want. There's this like quote from someone about how forgiveness or like acceptance is about setting a prisoner free and then realizing the prisoner was yourself.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And religiously speaking, if you are harboring any resentment or any hate, we do have in the Quran says, "Afallahu amma salaf." So that means forgive the person who wronged you. Because really, that forgiveness is going to benefit you first, mm-hmm. before it goes to the other person that you're trying to forgive. I'm sorry. So Yeah, you cannot harbor on hate, but we're bombarded by hate. People are putting this, they want this division. Again, they want us and them, us and them. There is not us and them. We are all human beings. We got to remember humanity. There's so much horrible things going on in this world that it will take every single one of us to stand together, hold hands, and stand up to oppression, stand up to hate, stand up to anything, misuse of power, basically. Misuse of, you have the ability to fix things, I think you have the responsibility to fix it. You have the ability to help someone, you have the responsibility to help someone. Take the first step. Do not wait for somebody to do it for you. You do it.
Yeah, that is, I mean, especially because of this wave of hate we're going through, the fact that your interfaith community is so bonded and strong and like a force is just so important. And I think, and we were talking about this in the other room, also just off topic, but my mom and my aunt and their friend, we made them all talk quietly because they were playing cards. And I just think that's very Arab and funny. They're all drinking coffee and being quiet for us. But before, when you were in the other room, you were talking about women's rights. And I wanted to get into that a little bit more because I think ignorant people that don't know a lot about other faiths, they just assume that, like, that we would support conservative agendas or something, or like anti-abortion, or like they see a hijab and they're like, oh, women must be oppressed. They probably don't have the right to do X, Y, and Z. So if you have, if you want to talk about a little bit, just more into that work and what you stand for with that work.
Yes, absolutely. Because, a lot of non-Muslim feel that, and because of certain countries, that the woman is forced to wear her hijab. She's forced by a man, whether it's a government official, a husband, a son, a father, whatever. I need everybody to know this hijab is requirement is really to allow the woman to conserve herself and be respectful. And because it's a modesty, it's what it is. And it is the decision of the woman between herself and God only. No human being can tell you what to wear. No human. And it's completely, this is what we looked at in the Bible study as well. If you listen to television and you see the Iranian government beating women because her hair is showing, that's men controlling the women. It is not, has nothing to do with religion. If you see the Taliban forcing women out of school and forcing them not to work and forcing them to wear the burqa, which they look like a tent, that's men controlling the culture. It is all about control. It has nothing to do with Islam. A lot of people don't even know that in Quran, we have an entire chapter covered to talk about the birth of Jesus. A lot of people don't understand that we Muslim, in order to be a true Muslim, we have to believe in all the prophets, being Jesus, peace and blessing be upon him, Moses, Muhammad, Abraham. These are all the same prophet. If you don't believe in him, you're not a Muslim. So one of the questions I was asked, why do Muslim hate Christian? Absolutely not. Absolutely wrong. It is untrue. So we are taught about Christianity. It's part of our faith. We say Jesus, peace and blessing be upon him. We don't just say Jesus or Isa in Arabic, basically. So it's the fact that, and God gave the women 1,444 years ago, gave her the right to vote, to choose, to inherit, to fight in war. And a lot of people don't know at the time, think of the tribal era then, where Khadija, the prophet's wife, was 40 years old, proposing to a 25-year-old man. This didn't happen here and then. Didn't happen, okay? So you cannot say women are a property. They're not of the men. They're not oppressed. Trust me when I tell you, a lot of men are more oppressed by their wives than women. So don't even think that. They're not really that, timid. And Yes. So women have the right to choose. We fought in war. We are able to inherit. We have the right to work. But we need to distinguish between what's real religion, what's cultural. Mm-hmm. What is going on in Saudi Arabia forcing women, well, now they allow them to drive. That's cultural. Taliban, that's cultural. Iran, that's cultural. Whatever you hear of such an oppression, that's an oppression, really. It's cultural. Also, our religion allows us to have abortion or until the 120 days. That's called, that's the religion, because we don't believe in that God puts the soul in a fetus. And we're not going to call him a baby. It's a fetus at the time. It's blood clot at the time. It has not formed into human being. It's in the process of being formed. And by the way, Quran said, talked about the process of forming the baby 1440 years ago, before science was able to tell us how it is formed. So, but even after that period of time, the Muslim have the right to choose. It's the sanctity of life is very precious to Muslim. We're not going to jeopardize the mother's life for the fetus. It's not a child yet. And most importantly, for us, we have to take care of the children. It's a requirement on us in the Quran that we need to love our children. We need to take care of them. Honor thy parents is one of the, one of our commandments, as well as mentioned several times in the Quran. So the women right, the woman does have the right to choose abortion if she needs to make that decision. And believe me, if you talk to women who have gone through that process, it is not easy process. And we don't need any men. And after all, let everybody practice their religion. Our religion allows us to have abortion. Why are you forbidden us from, and why should we follow your religion? We don't ask you to follow Sharia law. Why are you forcing us to follow your law?
Yeah. I'm really glad you brought up the abortion thing, because I don't think anyone knows that isn't Muslim or isn't educated on it, that it is allowed literally in our faith.
Yes.
Because especially in this country, religious freedom in quotes usually means conservative Christian, because that's the excuse they use for being anti-choice, is religious freedom. We don't have religious freedom. Exactly. Yeah.
Where is our religious freedom? Isn't the amendment, Second Amendment, give us the right to practice our religion without any harassment or anything? If you are talking about your religious freedom, why are you taking my religious freedom from me?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's not faith. That's hate. It's not based in
anything.
That's
control.
Yeah. This is a, I don't know, there's so many things I want to ask you, but I also know you have limited time. Can you just mention again the Green Ribbon and like what that's, like what's the current movement that you're working on?
Yeah, with the ACLU of West Virginia, as I said, I'm a board member of that. We are launching this Green Ribbon in order to allow, you know, if you wear a green ribbon, what we're trying to say with the abortion rights issue that was defeated in the House of Delegates in the Congress here in West Virginia, signed by the governor as well, which is disallowing women to have abortion. We are fighting that. And I am with them on that fight. And so we're launching this program. It shows that we have, women have the right to choose. As simple as that. And the Green Ribbon is really referencing a struggle that the Argentinian women fought years ago to have their rights. So that's what we're doing. And if you see somebody wearing the Green Ribbon, smile at them. That means they are like you. And we're trying to support this, spread it all over.
I love that. You're just doing really important work. And we're going to take our last break. We'll be right back. We'll wrap it up. Don't go anywhere.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
And we're back. We were just saying how important this is. And I just think, yeah, especially with today's messaging in the media and everything, no one understands Muslims, you know, and they don't understand just how progressive they are. Even what you said, like so many of my own friends don't realize that we believe in Jesus. We yes. believe in Moses. It's they're so important to us. Yes. So
a lot of people are surprised to know that we have a whole chapter on the birth of Jesus in our Quran, an entire chapter, Maryam. Which is they call her Mary. So, you know, that's not a religion that hates Christianity.
No, exactly. And I remember when I would go to Syria, like every year, my grandfather has like this ritual of like going to the masjid in the morning, bringing khubiz or bread from the Christian quarter and bringing this from the Jewish quarter and like all of these things just interacting peacefully. There wasn't any ever just animosity there. It was so normal.
I think also what people don't realize now in Syria and all Arabic world, actually in all Muslim country, everybody's allowed to live their lives. We have in Syria and Damascus, and I speak to that, and I've been to several countries as well. The church next to the masjid, next to the synagogue, we all lived in peace together. It was never anything animosity. And people don't realize the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He allowed the Christian and the Jews to live in their lives and actually he hosted at one time a 60 Christian people came to him. They were oppressed and he allowed them to live actually in the masjid and he gave them food and they were able to pray inside the masjid. So the Prophet gave us the best example on how to behave and what to do. He also supported the Jewish community. And also notice in our history, if people need to open their eyes and read their history. Now, when the Crusader came through Europe, they destroyed every Christian faith, every Jewish, everything in there that was not in there, the Protestant, basically. But when 80 years later, when Saladin came through Europe, he built the churches. He allowed the Christian to practice their faith. He didn't rape women. He and his soldiers, they didn't oppress anybody. They allowed people to practice their religion. So it's not a new concept for us as Syrians or as Palestinian or as any other in any other country. For all faith to live happily together and do interact together, work together, buy from each other, it's a concept that dates back to the Prophet, peace and blessing be upon him, Prophet Muhammad.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that, and a lot of people don't know that, especially when it comes to conflict, in quotes, in the Middle East, yes. being people thinking it's based in religion or based in... I don't know, like religious differences. Like Israel and Palestine is a perfect example of that. Like they think it's this issue that can't be solved. It's so complex because it's Judaism versus Islam, but it's actually very simple because it's just about apartheid and oppression and very logical things versus spiritual, deeply complex things. And I think It's being used as an excuse a lot of the times to like fuel more hate.
Yes, because there are Arab Christian, there are Arab Jews, there are Arab Muslims. They all live in Palestine. They all live in the Holy Land. They live together happily, and they actually fight together against the oppression. So it's not a new concept. It's something that we all learn to exist with and love and actually celebrate it, where our prophet was the best example for us to do. And he taught us that.
Yeah. I mean, even just realizing that, like, Masjid al-Quds, like, the fact that it's important to all of those religions, like, exactly. Doesn't that mean something more? Like, just how similar all of us actually are, and the fact that, like, actual, like, Islam is about accepting other people. Like, he let the Christians sleep at the masjid. That's real faith.
That's real faith. And Islam really is the word, it stems from the word salam. Salam is peace. And we get tainted by the very few people who commit heinous crime and aggression against Christians. Well, listen, if you look around now, what about all these murders, mass murders, if you like, committed by Christians themselves against their own? I mean, who would go into a school and kill 20-some kids? Yeah. He was a Christian. Why wasn't he labeled?
Yeah, I mean, if you just, even just statistically, if you look at the stats, terrorists are just like white men, like that's what, you know, but they're not terrorists. They have mental illness, they came from a great family or whatever the fuck, but the actual, sorry, I was trying not to curse this whole time and I actually just let that one slip. Oh well. Oh god, you know my real self now. But no, I think white men that have committed atrocious things have gotten a pass for so long because this label has been reserved for people that don't look like them, and like the terrorist label or just whatever.
And I mean, I had a conversation. We had a civil and human liberty summit about 4 weeks ago. It's a cooperative effort between U.S. government, actually the U.S. attorney, Mr. Michael Thompson, and his office, the state city police, the city mayor, interfaith community, every aspect. And as I was talking to him and having this discussion, I said to him, you know, the terrorists who really hijacked our religion the same way now I see these extremism hijacking the Christian faith. Because there is really no difference between them. You're tainting the Christian faith by having those extremism concept forced on everybody else. And the best one I really loved, as Dr. Friesen said, you know, it's becoming a point where I'm afraid to say I'm Christian. And I looked, and I was at his service, and I looked at him and I said, oh my God, if I'm always, when I hear somebody commit a heinous crime, I'm thinking to myself, oh God, please don't let him be
exactly.
Muslim.
Yeah.
And he's apparently thinking the same thing.
Hmm. I actually never thought of that, which is embarrassing, but that's true. That's the same kind of extremism being hijacked on their religion, where with everything, with every kind of, like...
No, because not every Christian is an extremist. Not every Christian is a bad Christian. Just like you're holding 1.7 billion Muslim hostage in the name of the few who commit these heinous crimes. It's not fair. It's not even humanly possible. Why are you holding me responsible for somebody who's deranged, basically, is committing a crime, whether the 9/11 or in the club in Paris, France? What do I have to do with him? I don't support that. I actually condemn it. And so is the Christian faith. A lot of my Christian friends, they hate what's being done in their name. They don't like it at all because, it's hijacking their religion.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember, because for me, often, like, I'll admit, like, I will dismiss the struggle of, like, a majority, because at the end of the day, like, there's still, like, a power imbalance there. But that's an important reminder to know that, like, every truly spiritual person is thinking, like, don't let this tarnish my soul. you know?
Basically, yes.
Yeah. I want to know if you have any, because you were at like the origin of all these interfaith like community, like just the formation of the God Squad. If you, and this is in West Virginia and in Charleston, where it's like,
Charleston by God, West Virginia.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you do not expect to find interfaith being so active and working together. It's not common. I had a BBC reporter who came here to Charleston after the Trump election and didn't even expect to find Muslim in Charleston, let alone to find a big masjid and to find a large community. She was wowed by that. And I think it's Laila Fadel, to be specific, and said to me, oh, my God, I didn't expect that. I said, yes, we're here and we're striving. As long as we keep the human connection, we respect each other, we love each other, we honor each other, and we celebrate with each other.
Yeah, I love that. And especially just because, like, I don't think we have that in even, like, Los Angeles or San Diego or anything like that. So the fact that it's here, it gives me a lot of hope. But do you have any, I don't know, tips or advice if someone wants to, like, get into being, like, having an interfaith community? Like, what are these first steps that they should make?
Talk to people. Is make, show up. Basically, the most important part of interfaith work is really to show up. Be there. Be present. If something happened when the murders in Pittsburgh, I took a few of my folks and went straight to the synagogue. We talked to each other. We're there for them. When every problem happens or when a mass murder, New Zealand, the masjid we had, you don't believe it. Mayor Amy Goodwin said to me, people are walking and drove to the masjid to show their support. It all it takes is talking to each other. Reach out to the other person. Tell them that you care. Show them that you care. Be there for them. I celebrate birth and death with my friends. I go to their funeral. I show up there. I'm there for them. And, you know, let them know who you are. Let them know how you feel about things. Talk to them. My God, there's a lot of value in a conversation. And it doesn't have to be formal conversation. Just talk to each other. And, you know, you learn to enrich your life. I have gained so much amazing friends in this valley. Since I retired, be honest with you, I liked Charleston before, but now I'm in love with Charleston because of the people who lives here and that I am a friend with. And, you know, it's just an amazing thing to have a human relationship. Just be kind to each other. Remember, kindness is really important in everybody's life. And everybody needs a smile. You know, in our faith, a smile is considered a sadaqah, which is
a good deed.
Yes, a good deed, exactly. So smile and say hi to anybody and don't react to anybody who's negative. When I get somebody who frown at me and get surprised of looking at me, seeing me, I get faces turned so quickly, I think their neck hurts by now. But I smile at them, I wave at them. Mm-hmm. You want to hurt me, go for it. I'm not afraid.
Because you said you got chased out of Kroger, I'm sure you've had other instances that are scary, but how do you bounce back, like internally? How do you keep going and remember that most people don't look at you with hate?
Yeah, exactly. Because he's sick. The guy who saw me shopping at 8:30 in the morning and I had to leave my buggy because a warning inside me says this is a dangerous situation. So I walked out. I feel sorry for him. I honestly feel sorry for him. I feel sorry for those people who feel that way. It's a hate that they have in their heart. I hope they get over it. I hope the Lord helps them get over it. And it strengthened my resolve. It does not make me stop or shy away from people. It actually strengthened my resolve. You want to be hateful? I'm going to show you the other side. That's all I know. And I think it's been wonderful. And it really gives me hope for myself. I'm a very happy individual. I'm happy I have my kids and my grandkids and everybody enriches my life. But having these friendship that I formed here in Charleston, I enjoy being with them. I honestly enjoy being with them and seeing them. And I'm on the board of Manimal. I was at their fundraising function last Tuesday. It was amazing seeing all these people getting together for a good cause, is to help the poor, feed the hungry. So it gives me hope. It gives me purpose in life. I'm not just wasting my life. Yeah. I hope I'm doing something good.
You definitely are. Even just, I don't know, even if my family wasn't here, I think the work you're doing with what you said about the how you help the refugees and how you help that family, and the fact that there are so many people here that are here through the help of others, you know, it's you're doing extremely important work. And I think especially with this new, it's not even new, but with this like emboldened hate or like negativity, and also COVID made it really hard to like remember.
Yes, COVID what actually did, it isolated everybody and it stopped us from doing the work. We stopped from physical work, meeting with each other, but we continued the work on Zoom. And we became more missing each other, wanting to see each other. And every time we get with a group and they say, oh, we can't wait to see each other. So, yeah, it delayed things. It isolated people, but now people have a more hunger to be with other human beings and to share a meal and to share a coffee, cup of coffee or a drink. You know, it's beautiful.
I think that's a really important, like a great way to send this off, is the fact that you are able, and everyone else is able, to make a seemingly negative experience or thing and really strengthen yourself from it. I think it's something that we can all do. And at the end of the day, you only grow and become better for it, as well as your community. We're going to sign off for now. And I should have asked you this before, if you have any social media or anything you want to plug, but is there anything you want to like, I don't know, like any kind of like website or social media thing you want to plug before we go?
Well, support WVIR and support the ACLU work, because they're doing extremely important work. Take care of each other, take care of the hungry, because that's what we're all here. And for to help each other on this earth, and be kind. Kindness goes a very long way. Be kind to each other.
Thank you so much for joining me today. You are truly a really special, beautiful person, and I'm really glad to have met you on this trip.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
And that's our episode. I'm going to sign us off. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. This is Shireen. It's ShiroHero on Instagram and ShiroHero666 on Twitter. And yeah, go do a good thing.
Is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl goes shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.